NADMH, KBSW.
NADMH.
KI7, QMD Mobile, listening on 19.
KI7, QMD Mobile, monitoring 145-19.
KE2 ASA Mobile.
KF8 ENF monitoring. KF8 ENF monitoring.
W8RPM. W8RPM, mobile, anybody around?
F-A-E-N-F, Ron, I believe, is that who I'm speaking with?
No, last I looked. Good afternoon. Actually, mobile in Petoskey, heading for Charlevoix.
Yeah, we were hoping the traffic was going to calm down after the weekend, but I was out earlier today between Harbor Springs and Petoskey, and it was still pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay this way until September, probably. But you never know. We had friends staying for the weekend that intentionally stayed overnight last night, left in the morning, left our house about 9. To head back to Madison Heights, and they're still not home. I just got a text from them.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I would have expected things to have been really calmed down by today. I think there's a lot of people, though, that didn't come up in June because our weather was so crappy, and they saved themselves up for July, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think this is a wider spread phenomenon. I think that in talking to some of the restaurant workers and people in the stores, they said that they're markedly busier this year than last year, whether that's a late start or whatever. Hey, I want to just alert you. I've been having radio issues. I run an FTM 400 in a truck. It's, I don't know, 6 years old, 5, 6 years old. Never gave me a lick of trouble. And the last 3 or 4 days, I've had issues where it just kind of shuts down on its own. It gives me an error message on the screen and then goes away. And I've been able to reset it and restore it every time, but there's something going on. I don't know if it's thermal or what, but I'm intentionally running lower power. It's not really something I want to have to do. I'm going to have to troubleshoot this, you know, because I push the envelope as far as VX and repeaters. Normally, I just run a little quarter wave, too. I don't have a big antenna on. I carry them around with me, but I normally don't have them on the truck. So if by some chance I disappear, like, you know, mid-sentence or mid-QSO, it's not that I'm being rude.
Yeah, understood. No worries. I've chased radio gremlins like that myself. By the way, even on low power, you're coming in very, very clear. No problems hearing you. What you're doing is working great.
Well, I'm on the 19, and I'm right in downtown Petoskey, so I could probably go to, I'm really running medium power, I could probably go to low, and I should be fine, you know. I don't know about all the way to Charlevoix, but certainly till I get a bit south of town. But, I don't know what this gremlin is. This is new, you know. I put this radio in, I kind of got used to it. It still has a lot more advanced features on it than what I normally use. I actually carry the manual around with me. But, you know, I got the Fusion figured out. I pretty much have the GPS figured out. You know, it's got some cool stuff on it, like an altimeter and whatnot. I don't use it for APRS or messaging or anything like that. So, and it's never given me a lick of trouble. I mean, nothing. And then I was on my way, I think I was on my way to meet somebody in Gaylord Thursday, and it just gave me a black screen, started displaying waiting in, you know, lowercase white letters. The audio still came through, didn't lose any of the transmission, but it just, the screen locked up, the whole system locked up, and I had to power cycle it to fix it. And then once I got it back, it was stupid. I had to reload it from the SD card. Now I've gotten to the point where I just leave the SD card in it, which is not something that I was doing, and I've had to do that two more times. So I'm kind of in a troubleshooting mode here. And I'm not, normally I do not run amateur equipment. Normally I run type accepted professional equipment, Motorola, Midland, Tate, some garbage electric, you know. I don't have a lot of hammy stuff, and it's frustrating.
Well, I mean, to me that sounds like it might be a heat issue. Maybe your fan's blocked or not working properly. I don't know. I'm far from any of that. I bow down to you, but yeah, that's really bizarre.
Well, the rig is remoted, and the deck is laying right behind me where I can see it. You know, it's laying on carpet, but the fan is rear-facing, and it's running, and it's not making noise. It's not like the fan bearings are gone or anything. I mean, there have been many a time where the thing's been buried under stuff, you know, under groceries or dog beds or clothes or whatever. And again, never had this issue before, but it does seems to be kind of thermal, but again, I'm not jumping to that conclusion, but anyway, it's been a good radio, you know. I mean, and even if it does some sort of repair or bounced around in the mobile for a good 6 years, this truck is a 2018, so really almost 7 years. I really can't complain, but to say that it's not frustrating me and annoying me is not the case, because it is.
Well, I have been reading through the manual and trying to figure out my Icon 5100 that I bought to celebrate my new ticket. And, boy, I jumped in the car over the weekend and took a trip with my old radio, and yeah, I'm going to have to buy another one of these and put it in my truck.
And it's easy, Ed. Go ahead. Easy, Ed, and up it in W8RPM.
I just listened to you for a little bit, and just a quick thought. I had a radio kind of did the same thing. Check for a memory battery, especially in the control head. I replaced that and straightened right up. Mine was, I don't know what model yours is, but mine was, I think, an Olinco, and it's just doing all kinds of goofy stuff. And I replaced the memory battery in it, and it'll work good for another 5 years.
Well, that's one thing I hadn't considered. I'm sure there is one. I don't know if there's a separate one in the head or not, but, yep, that's a good suggestion. One that I hadn't thought of. So, all right, very good. Thank you for that. We'll stick around if you like. Just Bentley and myself. My call is Whiskey 8 Romeo Papa Mike. My name is Ron, and I am mobile in Petoskey heading for Charlevoix.
Okay, well, my name is Don, Delta Oscar November. Call is November 8, Bravo Zulu November. I'm from downstate, and I'm heading back down there now, so I'll just listen as long as I can. Probably won't be too much longer, and I just thought I'd throw my 2 cents in. So, good luck. Have fun. NABZN, and I'll be on the side monitoring.
Yeah, Don, your call's familiar, but I wonder where downstate. My phone's ringing. Give me a minute.
KF8ENF, my name's Bentley. Don, which route are you headed back downstate? Are you going down 131 or I-75?
Well, we're heading down 75 right now.
All right. Well, I hope it's smooth sail for you and that you don't run into too many parking lots wherever it is you're headed back to.
Yeah, me too. It's pretty decent right now, actually. I was kind of surprised the bridge wasn't very very busy, and so far, first 20 minutes hasn't been too busy either, so hopefully it stays this way. All right, thank you.
Good talking to you. Have a safe trip.
Okay, I'm sorry. Don, where's home?
It's down by Monroe, which is right down by the state line. I only live about 5 minutes from the Ohio state line, just north of Toledo. So it's about as far down south as you can get, still be in Michigan.
Yeah, very good. I got family on Custer and Monroe, so I'm kind of familiar. I had some clients in Lambertville, so nice part of the state. Can't drink the water out of your well because of the sulfur. But all right, very good. I got to bail for a minute, but I'll be back. WARPM.
All right, well, just so you know, I lived in Lambertville for a while. I'm just in the adjoining town Temperance right now. So, all right, I'll talk to you later. I'll just be monitoring for a while. So, any DZN on the site?
KFADNF.
I'm back. WARPM.
KFADNF. Hey, I grabbed a phone call in there too, so I'm not sure when we lost each other.
I don't know. It's been a few minutes, but that's okay. I'm back on the road. You know, in hindsight here, I'm thinking Don might have hit the nail on the head. The reason I say that is because I turned off the vehicle and got out and got back in, you know, 5 minutes later, and it was stupid again. So he may have found my issue. I will put this bad boy on the bench when I get home.
Yeah, serendipitous. That's pretty cool.
I should have thought of that, but didn't. I was kind of going down the thermal path, but it doesn't explain to me, you know, why it would get goofy in the middle of a transmission or while it's powered up and it's got, you know, got regular 12 volt power coming in, not relying on the battery or CMOS or anything to maintain the memory. But you know, whatever. That if that's the fix, I'm happy as a clam, especially if it's something you know, easily replaced, like a CR, you know, 3025 or something like that. Even if it's soldering, you know, it's no big deal. It's just getting a replacement. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic here. And as I get closer and closer to Krause Road, I probably go to low power and be just fine.
You just cut out on me. Was that your radio cutting out, or maybe your transmission limiter?
Commonly called a timer. No, I don't think it was either. I think it was in the system. I'm looking at the transmit button. I don't think I came off the key there at all. But, there has been some funky noise in the system a little bit. It's been on both of you guys. It was on both of you guys earlier, but I don't hear anything now. Anyway, I went to low power, so this is 5 watts and a permanent mount quarter wave, and I'm maybe 8 miles south of town.
Well, that's great. A little bit of scratchiness in the background on the receive end over here, but other than that, you're sounding great. When I was running GMRS, that Petoskey Tower, which I think is on that same hillside as this one, boy, I could not reach that thing around Bay Harbor. That's where it would just cut out because of the hills in between.
Well, the output is a little fluttery here. I did go back to medium just for grams, and I think medium 15 watts. But, assuming you're talking about the Krause Road towers, which I think you are. You know, you had mentioned GMRS previously in our prior conversations. I don't have anything against it. I think it certainly has a place in the communications world and in the disaster preparedness world, but I can't help but think that most people that are on GMRS are because they, you know, don't have the motivation to follow through and get a license, you know, because you've got so much more opportunity, capability, bandwidth, power, you know, blah, 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 you know. Even with GMRS, you're limited to 22 channels and 50 watts, although I'm sure that that's almost, you know, ignored. But it's, you know, I mean, it serves a purpose. It's certainly better than nothing, and I know that there are a lot of guys that have got a fair amount of time and money invested in that, and all the repeater owners have time and money invested in it. But, you know, it's just another arrow, another little arrow in your quiver.
Yeah, it was a good entry, a good gateway. And, you know, there's friends of mine that will never, pursue even a technician's license. And you talk about, you know, preparedness and being able to communicate with people. I'm happy to maintain my GMRS license and capabilities on that just to be able to talk to those other guys and stay in touch with them. But I'm having a lot more fun on this 2-meter stuff and really looking forward to jumping into the digital piece of it as well.
And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do with a technician license, you know, especially at 6 meters and up and in those little sliver segments of HF. But I will tell you and suggest to you, and everybody's different, you know, and I don't know what your background is, if it's, you know, if you're really computer savvy or what, but it's different for everybody. But as a general statement, anybody that I know that just gets into it kind of cold, I say, look, it's an elephant, and you got to eat that elephant one bite at a time. And I would hope that you were, you know, sufficiently chewed and swallowed and digested of the last bite before you go on to the next bite, if you just want to kind of build a solid foundation. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I'm a former Motorola employee. I'm a former commercial broadcast engineer. And when I first got into digital stuff, man, especially Moto Turbo, which is otherwise known as DMR, man, I was just lost, you know, lost. And I'd been familiar with the Motorola digital platforms, the older XTS, Babco P25 type of digital stuff, and you really got to have a very, very thorough understanding of analog, how it works, all of the little nuances, offsets, PL, DPL, encode, decode, signaling, all that stuff. And when you've played around there enough to where you are completely and totally comfortable with that, then it's a good time to dip your nose into digital, you know. And digital is, it's like the old VHS beta thing that never really got worked out. You know, there is no standard to the standards. There's a half a dozen of them. And almost all of them are viable everywhere in the country, some more popular than others, some with, you know, wider areas, wider coverages here, there, wherever. But, man, you want to talk about somebody screwed up. You get a brand new licensee, doesn't know what he's doing, doesn't understand programming or understand any of it, you know, any of it, and then goes and buys a digital radio and then can't figure out why he's lost. And it's like, man, you know, just don't beat yourself up. One bite at a time. But, yeah, digital school. All-Star is really cool. And the great thing about All-Star is it's stable as all.
KF80NF.
W8RPM. Did I drop out or anything?
Yeah, that was real strange. I heard some beeping noise, like an alarm going off, and all of a sudden you dropped off.
But at the end, right? That's the timeout. I had the timeout set to, I think, 180 seconds.
Okay, so that must be what I heard, and then you dropped off. So I thought maybe you're your radio was telling you that it was time to shut down.
No, it's telling me that I'm too long-winded. But I'll tell you, I would very heartily recommend that you look at AllStar. Like I said, especially if you are the slightest bit computer savvy. If you're comfortable working with Raspberry Pis, then an AllStar node is the coolest thing in the world. You can build it on a $12 Bofang 888, and as long as you have internet connectivity, you can get on AllStar. Now you need to register with them, get a node number, and you know there's a few hoops to jump through, but in the long run, once you get it done, you know you're done and you're good to go, and you've got actual worldwide connectivity from your portable and your AllStar node.
Okay, that's interesting. So would that be considered like a hotspot that I've heard of with digital comms?
No, it's separate. So hotspots are a separate entity. Hotspots are 100% digital, whereas AllStar is 100% analog. And you don't need a digital mode. As a matter of fact, you can't really use digital modes with AllStar. What you do is you build yourself a node, which is an RF device, whether it be a portable or a mobile, interface to a Raspberry Pi. You could use a dedicated laptop or a dedicated PC, but the simplest way to do it, most common way to do it, is with a Raspberry Pi. Almost any model, even a Pi Zero, will work. I happen to use Pi 3s because it's got built-in Wi-Fi. So you download some software from AllStar on a micro SD card running Asterisk. You load that onto your Pi, on your Raspberry Pi. You interface it with an RF device. You then access it with another RF device in semi-duplex mode. And away you go. You know, you have a 5 or 6 digit numeric AllStar ID. You connect to other nodes with numeric AllStar IDs. And again, you know, it's internet based. You have RF at both ends. But, you know, a lot of people call it cheating. But it's very, very cool. And you can set it up privately. You can set it up publicly. You can access DX repeaters. Literally internationally, anywhere you want. You can make little private nodes, just you and your friends on a private node. Doesn't matter where they are, anywhere in the country. It's very cool. It's very easy and straightforward once you get used to it. You can buy pre-configured nodes. You can build your own, you know, whatever you're comfortable doing. It's fairly inexpensive. If you wanted to buy an all-in-one box, pre-made AllStar node with the RF side and a Pi, you're probably talking $160, $180 bucks, start to finish.
Okay, I think I understand how that would work. That sounds pretty cool. I've got a good buddy of mine who's also a ham, who also happens to be an IT guy, and I'm absolutely certain that he could walk me through building a little Raspberry Pi. I've looked at them, and they're not too daunting, it looks like. But the other thing that we tried and kind of turned our backs on was Meshtastic, kind of trying to set up a similar type private little network in the area. He lives over on the Petoskey side of the bay. I'm over here in Harbor Springs. Just to have another backup, additional source of communications, you know, set up with a little solar panel and just be operational. But we've been pretty disappointed with the way they've actually worked around here. I think we'd probably be looking at a more populated area where they might be a little bit more effective. But around here, it just doesn't have the user base yet, I think, for it to actually be very effective.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm not intimate. I understand the basic concept. I have a buddy down in Sterling Heights that's very familiar with them. He's got a bunch of them deployed around all over the place. I understand they're on the 900 meg non-licensed or license-free spectrum. Totally different animal. So to compare and contrast, before I get where I'm going, which is maybe 10 minutes ahead of me here, compare and contrast All-Star versus Hotspots, okay? All-Star is 100% analog. Hotspots are 100% digital, and they can be and tend to be any mode you want. You know, almost any hotspot, you can configure it for any of the digital protocols. You know, probably the most common is DMR or Moto Turbo, but you can also configure it for D-Star, for NextGen, for P25, for, you know, whatever digital mode is out there. And basically what a hotspot does is it will, as long as you have internet connectivity, it will allow you access onto whatever digital platform that is, you know, whatever and wherever. Brandmeister is one of the most popular, normally on DMR. The other nice thing that the hotspots will do is they will provide a cross-mode bridge. So let's say you just have a DMR radio and you want to get on a P25 talk group. You can do that through your hotspot. There are bridges that are from almost any mode to almost any mode. So, you know, your neighborhood, your area has a robust DMR / Moto Turbo, same thing, basically interchangeable. Robust DMR network, but you don't own a DMR radio. You have a P25 radio. Well, if you can find the right bridge and the right configuration of your hotspot, you can make that work all day long. Pretty cool. Hotspots are a lot more temperamental. All-Star is far more stable. But once you get a hotspot, a Zoom spot, a Shark, whatever brand name you want to use, build it your own, homebrew it, buy it canned, whatever. Once you get it configured, as long as your internet is stable and you get the DMZs and the port forwarding on your router straight, you're probably good forever.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, something more to research and learn about a little bit more. I did notice, you know, in looking at the 2-meter and 70-centimeter repeaters in the area using that repeater book app, it looks like quite a few of them, including this one, are All-Star repeaters. So I guess that's tied into that All-Star network, and with your little All-Star Raspberry Pi, that would be some way that you could access that. Is that how that would work?
Yep, absolutely. If you know the All-Star ID and the All-Star is online, you can access this network from anywhere you want, downstate, out of state, on your boat, from your phone, anywhere. It is quite cool. It's also subject to able to be abused because people will connect and then forget that they're connected. Or they'll get in a loop. They'll cause feedback. You know, there's all kinds of bad things that can happen, too. But it's all basically just experience, you know. It's just people getting familiar with how it all works, how it's supposed to work, what the etiquette is, what the protocol is, you know, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, wisdom comes from experience. And to get experience, you end up making mistakes. Everybody does. So, but I would absolutely suggest that All-Star should be your first mode. That, you know, I would strongly suggest that you get into All-Star before you get into any of the other digital things. It's far more straightforward. Easier to comprehend. You know, there are guys that just jump right into DMR and don't have a problem with it. I wasn't that guy. And again, I had a fairly robust background on digital stuff, you know, and I still had my issues. But, you know, maybe I'm a little dumber, denser than most. I don't know.
WHRCM Mobile downtown Charlevoix.
All right, well, that's very, very interesting. Thank you for that that lesson today, Ron. I sure appreciate it. KF8ENF, Harbor Springs.
Yeah, we were just crawling around your town yesterday in the rain, looking at real estate listings. I've got a couple people looking for property, not necessarily in Harbor Springs, but up here. And there were a couple of listings a little ways outside of town that caught our interest, so we went to look. I'm an agent as well. So I've got pre-qualified buyers looking for houses, looking for summer places, looking for second homes, and retirees looking to move.
Man, I am glad I am not in the market for a house in this market. Probably going to be a seller here in a few years, but boy, I sure don't want to move from where I'm at and try to find some other place around this area.
Well, it depends where you're going. You know, being able to sell at the peak of the market is a great thing, especially if you've got, you know, some equity and some built-in appreciation and you've been there for a while. The problem is, where are you going to go? You know, you're going to go from being, having the world by a string as a seller and then turn around and go, oh my God, how can I afford this stuff? Look at how much everything costs, you know. But everything is cyclic and it will get better. There will be an adjustment, call it a bubble if you will. Some people are calling it a crash and I don't agree with that. I don't think there's an impending crash. I think there's an impending adjustment. 15%, 20%, maybe 25%, maybe. But that's not going to happen until the inventory comes back. You're going to continue to see a seller's market as long as there's a shortage of inventory. And for the average guy, you know, the average guy buying a high hundreds, mid 200s, maybe low 300s house, I don't anticipate much of a crash. And then the high-end market, the 400-500 and up, those guys aren't affected by the economy really at all. You know, it doesn't matter what the economy's doing. Their income stream is firm. Their investments are solid, you know, unless the market crashes, which it hasn't and probably won't. You know, there's always money to be made in real estate, period, the end.
Yeah, my wife's been, you know, dropping the hints lately about maybe downsizing. We don't need such a big house anymore now that our daughter's gone. But I just got this place exactly the way I want it. And same thing, you know, I mean, we're not ready to relocate to some other locale where, you know, real estate or property is going to be much differently priced. So, you know, there's no advantage to moving into a condo and, you know, paying twice as much for our mortgage. So, my vote is to stick where we're at for now until we're darn good and ready, and you know, let the chips fall where they may at that point.
Well, and if you're in a single family house, and you know you don't have association dues, even if you are in an HOA or have a, you know, a smaller HOA where you're just paying for trash pickup or snow removal or whatever, as opposed to the typical condo. You know, hell, the average condo association dues are $500 a month now. You know, I just don't see an advantage to that anyway. Unless you want to truly use it as a condo, you're going to make it seasonal. It's going to be for, you know, I want to go to Boca for 4 months out of the year. You know, but the whole world is dying to move up here, dying to live up here, wants to buy stuff up here, is paying outrageous prices for things up here. No, your hold firm strategy is probably the correct one, unless, you know, circumstances change. And, you know, let's say your house is worth $400,000 today, and 2 years from now, maybe it's worth $350,000, you know? Are you going to be mad you didn't move? I don't know. Every circumstance is different.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things she mentioned was, well, you know, maybe we should have a small house up northern Michigan and a small house wherever we end up. I'm like, no. No. I said, I don't need the maintenance hassles of two houses, and I don't need to pay somebody else to do the things that I don't want to do for a second house. So I said, you know, if we move away from this area and we really miss it, we can always come back and rent a place for a week at a or two out of every summer, and still be ahead. But yeah, exactly. I don't see the type of place that I'm in that the value is going to decline exponentially. I think it's a little bit inflated right now, and you know, based on where we got into it 23 years ago, I mean, having that expectation, I think, is probably healthy, and we will not be disappointed when the time comes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, I'm at my next destination. I have a pickup here. Hopefully it'll be quick, and I'll be back again. And let's see if my radio resets when I turn it off. And if it does, it's going to pretty much confirm that memory battery thing. Back shortly, W8RPM.
All right, I will be here and there, so shout back out. If I'm next to the radio, I'll give you a call back. KF8 ENF, clear and monitoring.
W8RPM mobile.
KF8 ENF, monitoring.
Hello, sir. W8RPM.
Hello there. Are you heading back north?
Well, to be specific, I'm heading east, but I'll be in Petoskey momentarily, and then I'll head basically north.
So you were able to hold on to this this tower all the way over to Charlevoix and back on medium power, did you say, or low power? I can't remember which, but is that the case? Did you have any dead spots?
None that I noticed. I mean, I talked to you right up until where I pulled up at my destination, which was on the south side of Charlevoix, past the airport. So, yeah, works well. It's a great site. I would hate to think about losing this site. I'm on medium power now, but yeah. And I can work it all the way home, too, although when I get to usually around the Lansing or so, I switch back to the 7-4.
Well, I have not yet had a chance to drive around much and test the range with my setup. I do have a new mobile antenna coming that is going to replace what I've got for my GMRS setup currently. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing what the legs are going to be on some of these area repeaters. This is very cool.
Well, and remember, as you go up 119, getting towards Mackinac City and Wilderness State Park through that, you know, Goodhart Cross Village area, you got the 11. And that particular corner, all three of the repeaters overlap up there. I mean, I don't know which one's going to be stronger. I would think it would be the 11, but I'm not certain. I think that 11 is the lowest profile of the three. But, you know, if you were with a portable in Goodhart or in Cross Village, I think the 1-1 would be a better choice, but anyhow. What do you run over there equipment-wise, and what's the current and proposed mobile? I'm assuming you're sharing antennas and rigs and stuff between services, and I don't, you know, it's not a hot button for me. I understand the importance of type acceptance. I also understand that, you know, I've been violating it for years and no one cares, and a lot of times I violate it in the other direction, and that I take type accepted equipment and use it on the ham bands, as I've mentioned to you before. But what do you got over there? And the fact that, like I said, your license is a week or two old, you know, you've obviously been preparing.
My GMRS setup for my base station at my home is a BTEC 50-watt, you know, Chinese radio. got, I think, 75 feet of KMR 400 that runs up the side of my house from my basement up into my attic, across the roof line, and to an Edfong DBJ2 antenna that's tuned for commercial, and which would be the GMRS UHF bands and MERS. And that setup worked really, really well for me. I was able to hit all the area repeaters around here before the ice storm took most of them out, and was even able to get some really good simplex stuff on the MERS frequencies with my buddy. So yeah, that was my setup. My new radio for ham work, right? I bought an ICOM ID5100 and really starting to figure that radio out, and it's so far, you know, way more than what I need and what I can understand yet. But I've got that connected up to the same setup with that same Edfong antenna. I'm going to replace that with one that's tuned for 2 meter and 70 centimeter. And that's what I'm going to be using from my base station. Right now, I'm actually talking to you on a little 5-watt Baofeng handheld through the crossband repeater function. So that I'm finding very useful walking around my house and my property and being able to stay in touch with my big 50 watts.
Yeah, and you could probably turn that output down to medium or even low. I'm pretty sure you're, depending on what replacement antenna you got, probably enough slop there on the, or enough bandwidth, especially on UHF, for you to be able to use it on GMRS. I don't know if you're going to hang on to that Baofeng radio for, you know, family members or whatever, but if it were me, I'd probably trade it in for something that can be modified and you could use it for both. But, you know, again, we've had that discussion about selling radios. I doubt if you need 50 watts, especially if you've got a, I don't know how high your house is, what your ASL is. Your AHAT, average height above terrain. My house, because I'm waterfront, my house is only like 599, 600, 603, 605, you know. I'm really at the bottom of a basin, and it's very, very obvious. I have a UHF repeater at the house, and the range just sucks because I'm, you know, at the bottom of the bowl.
Location is right near the Harbor Springs Airport, little subdivision off Pleasant View. It's in the woods. I'm not too far above lake level. To my north, I've got, you know, the big ridge that Boyne Highlands is on, so that kind of blocks me to the north. I've got a two-story house with, you know, a gas fireplace with a chase that goes up over the top of the roof, and on top of that is where I have my antenna mounted, so I've probably got a good 25 feet above ground level on my roof, and it seems to be pretty effective. As far as the you know, the BTEC radio, yeah, I'm going to just throw that in a box, hang on to it, you know, just as a spare. If somebody needs one, I can hand it off, or if I need to connect it up, or just maybe use it for dedicated GMRS work. I don't know. Those are options.
So it's funny. The Chinese make a, I call it a Mr. Potato Head radio. It's everything in the head. And it's 20 watts, and it shows that it's like $90. Shows up wide open, you know, 138 to 174 and 400 to 480. Then they sell the GMRS version. It's more money, it's channelized, and it's, you know, locked down to the 462, 467 stuff. And I'm wondering, I wonder if that's modifiable. Not that I would ever want one or buy one. I have, that's the radio I have in her car at the moment. And it's funny because she upgraded from a Traverse to a Tahoe. And we were running all 2720 ICOMs, both cars, house, you know, boat, camper, everything, all 2720s. And when she upgraded to the higher, newer, greater, better vehicle, she didn't want the control head taking up the cup holder. So that's why I went to that, you know, Mr. Potato Head thing. Well, then the ice storm hit. She's like, I want my old radio back in the car. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a 25-watt BTEC in my truck. And again, I thought that, well, you know, I could get away with it for a while here. And, boy, the more I play with this ICOM 5100, the more I want one in my truck now.
Well, and I'm not going to try to convince you one way or the other. I will tell you, and I think I already have, you know, I have every digital mode out there except the D-Star. And there's a reason for that. D-Star never used to be very popular in Michigan at all, and especially up here. Now that's not the case. And there was some grant money available after 9/11, and some of the bigger counties downstate spent some of that grant money on D-Star radios and D-Star repeaters. But I don't own a bit of D-Star. I would venture to say that DMR Moto Turbo is probably the most popular mode in Michigan. But there's a fair amount of P25 stuff. And again, with these hotspots and cross-mode linking, it almost doesn't matter anymore. But, well, good. Sounds like you're off to a really good start. You know, there's a lot of guys that it's pretty common to have a $30 Bofang before you get your license. People listen with it. People play with it. You know, whatever. That's fine. And I own three Bofang radios, a 3, a 5, and a 10. But you got to take them for what they are. You know, they're a great entry level, but at the end of the day, it's a $30 radio.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I got a pile of these things that just sit around, whether we use them for, handing off to friends, handing off to kids. If there's a situation in the neighborhood where I want to stay in touch with my elderly neighbors, like the ice storm or something like that, I can hand them off and just put them on a GMRS or a MERS frequency or something like that, where people can just easily pick them up and talk on them. They're cheap enough to have a pile of them laying around just for emergency comms. Why not?
Well, and if you have one spare, if you have one that you can dedicate to an All-Star node, now it's all you need is a Raspberry Pi and some software, you know, and the ability to hack up and solder up some plugs and jacks to get your audio pass and your push to talk. And, you know, you're halfway there, literally. We like to build All-Star nodes on mobiles, specifically Motorola mobiles, because they're cheap. You can literally buy them on eBay for $20 and $30. And, you know, they're built like tanks. They've got far better receivers than any ham product ever made. They got oversized heat sinks. You put them on low power, you know, 6 watts, 8 watts, whatever, they will almost virtually run forever. The only thing that goes wrong with them is the caps fail over time. So when you get one, you know, if you get a 70s, 80s vintage radio, you recap it before you put it in service. But I have a mobile node made out of one. I don't have it in the truck at the moment, only because the power connector's faulty. I got to fix the power connector on it. But, yeah, I think you'd like All-Star. I would... And again, I can't really speak to D-Star because I'm not on it. I know it does provide some of the same type of connectivity like all the other digital modes. This is a Fusion radio. I have a Fusion portable. I have a monoband Fusion radio at the house. I just bought, in Dayton of this year, I bought the dual-band Fusion mobile to replace the monoband. That's sitting on top of my repeater cabinet. But, again, the only thing that limits you in this hobby is, you know, the amount of time you have to devote and the size of your checkbook.
Yeah, that's for sure. Just ask my CFO about that. She's not too pleased sometimes.
Get her a license. That helps. Take my word for it. But, yeah, ask me how I know. My first wife had a license. And then I skipped over several, not for lack of trying. The most recent one is bordering on being an electrical engineer. She's a high-voltage technician for ITC, and she had no interest. The current one's an accountant, and, you know, she had lots of interest her whole life, and I just kind of pushed her over the edge. So that all worked out. But, you know, there's worse things you can spend your money on. Way worse things.
Yeah, I've got a couple of, you know, healthy habits already, whether it's firearms, fine bourbon, fine cigars. You know, just throw radio on top of the list. But fortunately, I never got bitten by the bug to have a boat, so I've been able to avoid one of the biggest expenses ever there.
And you're not wrong with that assumption. And I own two boats. But there's a greater curse called an airplane.
Tell me about it. My 82-year-old father has two of them, including one that he built by himself. So, yeah, I know a little bit about airplanes, and he's been at it so long, it was something that I was definitely going to avoid on my own.
Yeah, but you got access to two airplanes. Hello. And you're retired, so just don't get the light sport. Just go for it and get it done. Does he keep his planes at harbor?
Lives down in the Grand Rapids area, a little town called Lowell, where I grew up. And he keeps his planes at the little municipal airport there. So one of them's a two-seat biplane, a Starduster aerobatic aircraft. And he can take me up on that pretty much whenever I want when I'm down there and give me a little stick time, too, which is fun. But his other airplane he built is a Midget Mustang, which is a real small one-person go-fast aerobatic plane. And, he's had a lot of fun building that.
And he's got a current medical at 82?
The column is in fantastic shape, and does just fine with that.
That's awesome. I started a couple times. I had a lot of right seat time. Never had the... It's not that I didn't have the motivation. I just didn't have the money. You know, and now there's always something else comes up. But kind of getting to the point in my 60s that might be a pipe dream that's kind of slipping away. But I live across the street from a GA airport, so and listening to aviation is one of my favorite pastimes. I'll have a Nav Air radio on in the house more than I have an HT or even a public safety radio. But I hear you about the bourbon. I have some kind of recent health issues. I never really was much of a drinker, but, you know, doesn't mean you can't appreciate it. I gave somebody a $260 bottle for Christmas this year. But, you know, it's everything in moderation. I mean, perspective is everything. You got, like you said, you know, you got people that don't bat an eye dropping $300-$400K on a go-fast boat, you know, with a bunch of huge outboards hanging off the back, or, you know, a $160,000 for a new truck. But, again, all about perspective.
I wonder how some of the folks around this area can afford some of these big hobbies. I've come to the conclusion that a lot of people really leverage themselves to the hilt in the name of fun. So, I've managed to hold back on some of that stuff and hopefully make smart decisions which are going to pay off here in the near future.
I will tell you with an absolute 100% degree of certainty, having gone into mortgage banking and real estate as a second and third career, the majority, and I mean majority, of high-income individuals, doctors, lawyers, partners in accounting firms, you know, people well up in the medical field, you know, healthcare technicians, you know, nurses, BSN nurses, CRNAs, these people with these highest incomes are absolutely mortgaged to the hilt. You know, between student loan debt and expensive hobbies and, you know, caviar case on sometimes cheap whiskey or expensive beer incomes, the number of deals that crashed and burned because of people's debt-to-income ratios, you can't even imagine.
That's for sure. My wife actually was part of that sphere for a while. She worked at a couple of the local community banks as a mortgage officer and rode some of those refinance waves and, you know, did a lot of big deals around the area. And she wouldn't share specifics with me because she's too professional, but yeah, certainly that was an issue. A lot of deals blew up in her face, but I think some of it is the industry too. I don't know if it's this way anymore. She's been out of it for almost 10 years now, but it seems like the industry fosters it. When we bought this place 23 years ago, I was shocked at what we were supposedly able to afford. And I told my wife, I said, I'd still like to eat steak once in a while, so let's go with something a little bit less. And she heartily agreed.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's more basic than that. It's I would like to eat once in a while and be able to afford furniture and carpet and drapes, you know, put gas in my car. That is still an issue. I mean, I'm working with a client right now that I probably got both sides of the transaction, both the mortgage side and the real estate side. You know, and this guy qualifies for $400. And he doesn't want to go a penny over $3, and I don't blame him. You know, I'm like, look, I'll show you whatever you want, but at the end of the day, you're the client, you're the guy writing the check, you know, and nobody wants to be house poor.
Well, I just remember where we were at with, you know, newly married, and, you know, we had gotten ourselves into a nice starter home, and we had a young baby, and I just don't know how young people in that situation can actually afford to do what we did, and it's kind of sad to see. My daughter's 24 now, and she's moving off down to Florida pretty soon, but boy, I don't know, even with the great job that she landed and the awesome career that's laid out in front of her, what her capabilities are going to be.
Yeah, you had mentioned that. Well, my daughter's 34, married 3 years, bought their first house 3 years ago, and the first number was a 3. The first number of my first house that I bought when I moved out of my parents' house was a 5, and it was only 5 digits, not 6.
Yeah, I remember those, you know, growing up in the Grand Rapids area, and there were just so many, you know, 50K houses for sale, even back in the 90s. And some of them you didn't even have to fix up all that much. They were move-in ready at that price range. And now, like you said, you know, 300, 400 is what's considered a starter home anymore. And I look at some of these modulars that are going up. What's that new development done at Gravel Pit? Old quarry off Pickerel Lake Road that they're calling, you know, affordable housing, and you know it's $300,000 for a, you know, 1,200 square foot modular with a view of a quarry lake. Wow.
Pine Pond. I'm intimately familiar with it because I have clients interested in it. It's a very innovative way of financing. There's a special deal with HUD and USDA. Your wife would appreciate this. There's a special deal with HUD and USDA that allows single-family financing in a PUD/condo environment where you own the house, but you don't own the land it's affixed to. And it's weird, it's innovative, but it's weird, and it's scary, because it's a social experiment. No one can say in 10 years whether those houses are going to appreciate or depreciate, because that's really never been done before, at least not in this state. So if somebody really wanted one, I'd put them in it, but I'd make sure that we had lots of long conversations about all the upsides and downsides and the fact that there might be a better alternative out there. Sure, it's new construction. You got a little bit of a warranty. It's kind of a cool environment. But that space rent, that never goes away, even when you pay the place off. It, you know, it's like, it's living in a high-end mobile home park, you know. You might be better off with a Class A RV. That way you can at least pick it up and move it when you want.
Wow, I didn't know that about that place. But yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It sounds almost like a mobile home park where you're just paying rent on the dirt, and you know, you own the house. That's you know, what happens if you default on the rent?
They foreclose on your house. That's what. Or they force you to move it, which there's another controversial topic / question there. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with how affidavits of a fixture work, but in order to get the BOCA compliant financing on a HUD mobile, there has to be an affidavit of a fixture, which means it's no longer a mobile home, and you've got to, you know, it's got to stay there. And normally, that's in an environment where you own the land. You know, you buy an acre or two, or even a residential lot, and you plop a modular on there, prefab manufactured on there, anchor it down with screw anchors, and call it a day. And then your bank calls it a house. You know, you take the wheels and the tongue off, and you take the registration plate off it, and you tear up the vehicle title, and now you have a deed. But, yeah, it's odd. The whole thing is odd.
Yeah, it'd be interesting how the taxes work on something like that, too. You know, if you're not being taxed on the value of the property itself, but, you know, just on your domicile. Is it at a reduced rate, I wonder?
You're not being taxed at all. You, as the end user, are paying a lot fee, lot rent. That lot rent goes to the landlord / developer, who pays all the real estate taxes. You don't have real estate taxes except for ancillary buildings, outbuildings, garages not part of the initial construction. It's just weird. They're making it up as they go. And, again, there may be some opportunity there. There are occupied units in there already, probably about 10. I had clients that looked at that were very interested in it. None of them pulled the trigger. I'm kind of glad. I think I'd rather see in a conventional mobile home park. There are some nice waterfront ones over in Charlevoix and up and down 31. And then south of Charlevoix, I forget the names of little burgs, but between there and Traverse City. So, yeah, the hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I'm like, I just don't. Maybe it'll work. Maybe everybody in there will come out heads up, cash positive, happy, you know, fat and old. But maybe not. You know, I'm just not willing to risk it. Very interesting history there, though. If you read all the promotional material and, you know, learn about all the little nuances. I get it. Affordable housing up here, you know, it's a catchphrase, but it's also a significant issue. Lots of businesses around here could be expanding, want to expand, can't get workers because they can't get housing. W8RPM Mobile, I have taken this repeater on medium power all the way across Wolverine Road, almost to 27. And you see how well the signal's held up.
Wow, so when you say Wolverine Road, I'm assuming you mean Mitchell. Was that like C-58 going east out of Petoskey across to Wolverine?
Correct, up and down all these hills.
This is one of those things, and my next road trip, I'm going to have to test it out and sharpen up my skills on switching between different frequencies and repeaters and tones while I'm driving. That ought to be fun.
Well, it's the beauty of these modern radios is that they've got, you know, lots and lots of memories. And what I've done since the 99-channel Motorola days is I've filled my code plug with the entire state. It's easy to do with the RT system software, or even with, like, the Yaesu ADMS software. If you have a premium subscription to Radio Resource, or you just go to the MARC page, and you just export the whole state database as a CSV file, and then you import it into your programming software, you might have to do it twice, you know, if you've got both a VHF and a UHF. But I have the entire state in this radio. I have most of the state of Ohio, some Indiana, and it's easy, you know. Talk about, you know, you're doing it while you're driving. You just flip through it, you know. You just put it on scan and flip through it. Or you sit there and hold the up-down button. You don't have to search for tones or offsets or anything because it's already in there.
I just bought the RT system software the cable. For my new ICOM radio. One of the issues I have is that I run a Mac, so the software from ICOM is Windows only. So I heard good things about the RT system software and very chirp-like interface, so I decided to spring for that and just call it a day. And one of the things I like about this ICOM radio is I think it's got all of the country's repeaters downloaded into it already. There is a procedure to update that with the SD card, and the GPS that's built into the unit will show you the closest repeaters to your actual location. I'm not clear on whether that works on analog or just the digital repeaters on D-Star, but it's one of those things I am intrigued by and need to figure out a little bit more.
My guess is it's just going to be on the digital stuff, but, you know, it could be the same. Again, I freely admit, I don't have any D-Star experience. I can't really be help for you there. But yeah, plenty of stuff to pay for. Again, RT Systems, great company, great tech support. You can call them and ask them anything. If they don't know, they'll get back to you. There's a lady that I see at all the swaps, big national swaps. And she is the tech support. She answers the phone. She will spend a virtual unlimited amount of time with you on the phone to solve whatever your problem is if it's related to programming and their product. I cannot say enough good things about them. I don't like the fact that they do like other cell phone manufacturers and they hard code into the TTL data of their cables. You know, the cables are a single-use cable. And even though it's an 8-inch 3-conductor USB plug, they hard code into the TTL logic, the whatever kind of digital fingerprint. So you got to buy a separate cable for each radio, and it drives me crazy.
D6 $6 cable I bought is only going to work with the one radio that I attach it to the first time. If I have a second radio of the same type, same model, I'd have to get a new cable to fit that one?
No. No. That cable will work with any 5100 that you have. But even though it's by physical appearance the same cable, electric the same cable, it's a 3-conductor 8-inch plug, it's a 8-conductor RJ45, it's a 6-conductor RJ11, it's only going to work with that particular model of radio. As many as you want, you know, it's not enough to be able to know, you know, serial numbers or anything like that, but it still burns me to have to do that, because I know electrically the stuff should work. So, anyway, Bentley, I'm on my last stop here. I'm pretty convinced that my radio's got a dead CMOS battery, because it's worked just fine, as long as we've been talking here all day long, as long as I don't shut it off. So, I think I owe that guy a debt of gratitude, and I gotta find a battery and replace it on the main board, and my problems are over. Listening for your final, sir. I'm out. Talk to you soon, W8RPM.
All the insight and help that you've offered me, and the encouragement as well. So, really, really intrigued by that that All-Star stuff. I'm going to look into that a little bit more and get my my IT geek buddy tuned up on it, too. I'm sure that's something he'd appreciate. So I'll catch you down the wire again. Thanks again. KFADNF, clear.
KFAENF testing.
KI7QMD mobile responding.
Hey, thanks for that. Just checking on some power settings here to see if I can get into this repeater on low.
Hey, sound pretty good. Are you into the 1-9?
Yeah, correct. From Harbor Springs across the bay.
Yeah, sounds good. Pretty good. I'm just leaving Harbor Springs myself, so your signal sounds great.
All right, thank you for that. I think I'll leave it here then.
73 KI7 QMD mobile.
KFAENF clear.